From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of February, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the agricultural futures markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Pete Levitt will be here to take up the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. And along the way, Dave Dickey will update what's been happening in the world of agricultural news and take us into Lisa Brault's backyard. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this Thursday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished lower. Nearby contract in the March wheat at $7.47 and a quarter, down 15 and 3 quarters. May at $7.82 and a half for the soft red, 15 and 3 quarters lower. July at $8.14 and a quarter, down 17. And September soft red at $8.45 and a quarter, down 17 cents. Hard red in Kansas City, 17 and a quarter lower on the lead option March at $8.61 and one half. March corn futures back in Chicago, 5 3/4 of a cent lower at $6.85 and 3 quarters. Again, the settlement down 5 3/4 for the March corn. May futures at $6.96 and a half, down 5 3/4. July at $7 and a penny, down 6 cents. September at $6.30, down 10 and a quarter. December at $5.83, down 8 and 3 quarters. And the March of 2012 at $5.91 and a half, 9 cents lower. March soybeans today, $13.18 and a quarter cents, down a penny and 3 quarters. The May at $13.29 and a quarter, 2 and a quarter lower. July, $13.37 and 3 quarters, down 2 and a half cents. And the August beans at $13.25, down 3 and 3 quarters. November's at $12.86 and a quarter, down 9 and a half cents. March bean meal futures at $3.50.40 are down $1.40. The March soybean oil at $54.61 finished down 41 cents. February live cattle futures at the CME up 77.5 cents at $111.10. The April, though, down 32.5 at $113.65. March feeder cattle at $129.40 up 55 cents. The April futures up 42.5 for 100 pounds at $130.97.5. And April lean hogs today finished at $89.50, down $1.47.5. The May at $98.10, down 97.5 cents on this Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. April crude oil futures, $97.24 a barrel, down 86 cents. Ethanol at $2.48 and 6 cents, a penny and a half higher. Natural gas at $3.79 and 3 cents, down a dime and 7 cents. March heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.88 a gallon, down 2 4/10 of a cent. And the gold futures for the day at $1,415.30. Up $1.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,044 is down just about 62 points. The dollar at 77.05 is down 0.35 on the afternoon. There is a weather warning slash watch out for this afternoon. A storm warning is posted for four Iroquois counties from 6 p.m. tonight. That's a winter storm warning. Until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and for McLean County from 6 p.m. tonight until 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. The winter storm watch is also posted for Champaign, DeWitt, Macon, Piatt, and Vermilion counties from 6 tonight until 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. The weather forecast for Urbana-Champaign says this afternoon there's a 50% chance of rain. It'll be cloudy, a high near 42 degrees. Northeast winds between 14 and 16 miles an hour. They'll gust as high as 21 tonight. Rain, snow, and becoming all snow after 9 p.m. this evening. Lows around 29 degrees. It'll be blustery with a northeast wind between 16 and 20 miles an hour. They'll gust to 29. Chance of precip is 100. New snow accumulation, get this, from 3 to 7 inches are possible. Friday, a 30% chance of snow before noon. Mostly cloudy, a high near 35 degrees. North-northwest winds between 6 and 17. They'll gust to 24 on Friday night. Cloudy, a low of 24 degrees. East-northeast winds at 5 to 7 miles an hour. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension. Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, is with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Well, you and I are scheduled tomorrow, along with a couple of other folks, to be right here at the iHotel in Champaign-Urbana, though it looks like the weather might not cooperate until the afternoon for the Illinois Soybean Research Summit. Should be a good day. Chance for producers to come out, Dan, to take a look at how their checkoff dollars are being spent on agricultural production research and soybeans and other types of research, too. They'll be there all day long. We'll kick off that morning, by the way, with a look at crop insurance. Bruce Sherrick will be here. Bruce is part of the FarmDoc team, and he makes trips often to Washington, D.C. to do the kind of behind-the-scenes sorts of things with RMA, figuring out some of the numbers behind crop insurance. Daryl Good will be along around 1:40 in the afternoon to do an Ag Outlook. And then you, Dan, along with Pete Manhart and Bill Mayer will be on in the afternoon. That'll probably be easier sledding to get here by then, I suppose, to take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural commodities for a live Commodity Week program. So I do appreciate you doing that, too.
Well, yeah, I spent the weekend in central Texas, and it was 82, 83 degrees, and I come back to a snowstorm. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, and it sounds like it's going to be kind of ugly. I forecast for at least our immediate area. It says 3 to 7 inches are possible in some of the areas, not quite in Urbana-Champaign, but if you get to the McLean County area and some of those places. So it could be kind of ugly tonight and tomorrow, I suppose.
So I won't be getting rid of my four-wheel drive pickup truck anytime soon.
Well, if you're going to Texas, you got to have a four-wheel drive anyway, don't you?
No, you just have a big dually.
Oh,
big diesel dually, extended cab.
And a horse trailer.
And a horse trailer. Cattle trailer.
Cattle trailer. Well, there you go. There you go. Okay, so let's talk, Dan, about what's happened this week, because it's been kind of ugly for a good portion of the week. First, what did you make of the trade during the week, and then how did it round out when you look at your charts?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Tuesday's decline definitely has put some warning signs on the charts, simply because unless we have a good recovery here tomorrow, going on into Monday, we're very vulnerable to closing at least soybeans with some monthly down reversals on the charts, which is not necessarily a kiss of death, but it is something to pay attention to. Now, on old crop corn, that looks like old crop corn is going to close out the month higher because it's been so strong. New crop corn is vulnerable maybe to a monthly down. So that definitely will have technicians' attention here to see how this market responds over the next couple of days. But when you look at the overall chart picture, or at least on the new crop, the way I draw trend lines, we are still in an uptrend. We are now down at the lower half of that uptrend channel. So we are beginning to stabilize, find some support. We did see that yesterday. Today it's not uncommon to maybe lose some ground back. But I think from a technical perspective, if you want to keep your bull hat on, it would be, I think you would want to see some higher closes tomorrow. That would kind of lay the groundwork that maybe this correction is over with. But been my observation in marketplaces, anytime you have a big move, a limit move one way or the other, you kind of got to wait about 3 days because the people that were long this market definitely went on margin call Tuesday night, and then, of course, they kind of drag their feet and hope and pray that the market comes back. Well, it did come back for them on Wednesday. okay, now we softened up a little bit. So tomorrow is going to be critical because they're going to have to make the decision whether or not they want to send the money in or get out. So if we would have a higher close tomorrow, I think that would be a good sign that maybe the correction is complete. And then maybe we'll finish out the month choppy, and then we'll take a look at it at the first part of March and see where we go from there.
So another restless night for those who are on margin calls, and they won't sleep well, but tomorrow they'll have to make a decision, or quite likely to make a decision.
Yeah, usually you got it depend upon who you broker with, but, you know, 2 to 3 days, you kind of want to drag your feet before you have to send money because you're hoping it's just a blip in the screen, and then but if it doesn't come back to you too much, and then you have to decide whether or not you want to go ahead and send that money in or you want to get out. So that's always a concern when you have big moves like what we had on Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, basically, I don't know if anybody can give you a real good explanation, but I think the dominant force here is fear that a spike in energy prices up into this $120 or $140 range would pull the rugs out from world economic recoveries that's beginning to take hold, and then that would maybe reduce demand for commodities and kind of put everybody under pressure. I think there's that thinking. I think that's more dominant than some people felt, that maybe some of these funds just want to get out of other commodities so they can put more money into oil to run it higher. I mean, I was listening to CNBC when I was on the road yesterday, and they had some guy on there talking about $240 crude oil. Well, I think if we go to 240, Todd, we'll be riding bicycles because I don't think this economy could withstand that type of jolt in energy. It would be totally devastating, I think, because you'd be talking about what $8-$10 gasoline, and I don't know anybody could afford that.
All right. So if you're a producer, and I know you want to watch tomorrow and probably Monday, but then we've got the end of the week at that point. We've got crop insurance in at that point. It looks like it will certainly be worth a purchase. I let the crop insurance guys make that decision, and the farm doc guys upstairs talk more about that later, upstairs in Mumford Hall. But if that's the case and you look at the market and things look like they're going to fold, do they need to do something about making actual cash sales for new crop?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to do an increment. I mean, I don't. It depends upon where they're at in their sales program, but they do have a good insurance program underneath them. I still like puts, minimum price contracts you can do at your local elevators. You don't have to put up any money, so you kind of lock in some bottoms. If you wanted to cheapen up the cost of that put, you could, you know, maybe sell a call out of the money, so then you get into a minimum maximum contract. That's one approach to take the market. The other one is do small cash forward increments or hedge to arrive increments. I think seasonally we're still on track. If anything, the seasonal pattern looks like it's maybe running a couple weeks early. It's not uncommon to have some kind of break in March. It kind of looks like maybe the break's coming a couple weeks early, just like the decline that we normally get into early December. It came in mid-November this year. So I think seasonally we're still on track, but you do have to keep an eye on you know, like I said, this monthly reversal down has my attention, but it hasn't broken any trend lines yet, and we'll have to kind of see how this thing unfolds over the next 2 to 3 days. But I think prices have gone up to the point where one needs to be taking a look at peeling off some inventory to kind of protect your downside. But I'm not ready to jump off the cliff yet.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Very well.
See you tomorrow. Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He will be with me tomorrow at the Illinois Soybean Research Summit. That's at the I Hotel. You can still get in on that one. Make a reservation at ilsoy.org. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll help us take a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, The ethanol industry says it needs to quickly get behind a reform program to take to Congress. National Corn Growers Association CEO Richard Tolman says that the four major ethanol groups, NCGA, the Renewable Fuels Association, Growth Energy, and the American Coalition for Ethanol, have a discussion paper under consideration and are planning another meeting on Friday to try to move it forward. The proposal most likely involves reducing the volumetric ethanol excise tax in exchange for federal help getting more flex fuel vehicles on the road and getting gas stations to install pumps that would sell ethanol as well as other gasoline. Major banks warned today that OPEC needs to act as oil prices near levels that could derail economic recovery. Goldman Sachs issued a note saying the world would not be able to cope with another Libya-style oil production outage as Brent oil prices rallied by over $8.50 a barrel. Deutsche Bank said oil above $120 a barrel would be an inflection point for global economic growth. President Barack Obama has scheduled a trip to Central and South America next month with plans to visit Brazil, Chile, and El Salvador. The trip will include meetings with the country's leaders to discuss a range of issues, including economic prosperity and job creation through increased trade and partnerships, as well as energy and security cooperation. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development today says that international trade picked up in the last 3 months of 2010. Merchandise exports from the group of seven industrialized countries, plus Brazil, Russia, India, and China, rose 8% in the fourth quarter from the previous 3 months, while imports gained 7%. Chinese exports grew 3% over the period, while imports increased 9%, cutting China's trade surplus to $41 billion. U.S. exports grew 5.1%, outpacing a 1% increase in imports and reducing the trade deficit of the world's biggest economy to $152 billion. U.S. chicken producer Sanderson Farms today reported a larger-than-expected quarterly loss due to an excess of chicken that hurt prices and much higher feed costs. Slow restaurant sales plagued Sanderson, causing an excess of meat. Sanderson reported a first-quarter loss of $33.6 million, or $1.52 per share, compared with a profit of $15.8 million, or 75 cents a share a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, which will come to you live tomorrow, if you're in our audience, that is, at the Soybean Research Summit to be held at the I Hotel. You can register for that event still online at ilsoy.org. It's free. It's a day-long event. The Soybean Association, the National Soybean Research Lab in the state of Illinois, will feed you. But we'd like you there, well, because it's time for you to see how your checkoff dollars are doing production agriculture research on soybeans and get a little update on crop insurance and the commodity markets and, of course, catch up on, well, Commodity Week. Our guest panelists this week include Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Bill Mayer. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing right here in Champaign. That'll happen at about 3:30 in the afternoon, but you'll arrive much earlier than that, around 8 o'clock a.m. You can call the Soybean Association in Bloomington to get your registration done, or go online at ilsoy.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hey,
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brofs says February means one thing for sure, road trip. Lisa heads south in search of local delights in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Every once in a while, a person has to get out of their own backyard and check out what's happening in other backyards. I like to do this locally, of course, being particularly nosy when it comes to that kind of thing. But once a year, usually in February, I head south with my husband and my kids to spend a week or so on the Gulf Coast of Florida. And I returned home last week feeling two overwhelming feelings. A, it's hard to leave weather like that. But B, we're incredibly lucky in central Illinois to have a vibrant and active local food culture, especially as it continues to develop. Of course, I ate plenty while down south. But since we stayed with relatives and weren't shopping much for ourselves while we were there, and since we got to explore the local restaurants a fair amount, the food habits we'd adopted at home got thrown off. Shopping for food, as usual, was an experience. Every year, I hope to find more locally grown produce, and every year, my hopes for produce bliss are dashed. I'm interested in the local produce not so much because it's local, but mainly because produce we can't get in Illinois in February is actually in season there. I'm totally craving produce that's fresh and great tasting after months of produce that isn't. And it's also important to me to support the smaller farmers wherever they are. Sarasota, which is about 20 minutes away from where we were staying, has a magazine that's part of the National Edible Series and is home to a large healthy food chain store. But despite this, I didn't really feel like there was much available in the way of information about accessible small farms and local food like we have here. Locally grown tomatoes and citrus should be quite easily available in Florida in February. But I found them impossible to locate in grocery stores, and not much more was available at the farmers markets I saw. Those were mostly resale markets, too, meaning the people selling the produce often didn't grow it, and they don't know that much about it. It was easy to tell who was reselling. Resellers often left the produce stickers on the fruits and vegetables. I saw hardly any roadside markets this year, too, which I'd relied on in the past for fresh produce. Again, I was thinking about fresh and tasty and of the place and supporting the local food scene. I can get strawberries grown on large farms in Florida here in Illinois right now, but they taste pretty terrible. Those same strawberries, they're what's available at the grocery stores and the resale markets in Florida. They don't taste that great there either. Where were the small farmers? They're there, but I really had to look. I did, in the end, manage to find some Florida strawberries grown by a local farmer, and they were awesome and inexpensive. My experience with restaurants was similar. Even before the BP oil spill last year, I've been amazed by how few restaurants offered information about the provenance of their seafood. Some of it was advertised as locally caught, but not as much as I thought would be. Maybe restaurant owners either assume people think it came off a boat that day, it being Florida and all, or that people don't really care. They're just there to eat. As an aside, I think I come by this curiosity about food and its origins naturally. When I was a kid living in Florida, I spent a fair amount of time at my oma's apartment, which sat on the edge of a large orange grove not far from Orlando. One particularly memorable visit, she had me, my brother, and my Aunt Ingrid trespassing up in the trees, picking oranges so she could juice them later. We had to remain completely silent up in the trees whenever anyone happened by. Later, Oma lived in Titusville, over on the east coast of Florida. She had several citrus trees in her yard, grapefruits, mineolas, tangerines, and juicing oranges. She was always out picking the fruit and juicing it and freezing it and making me do it whenever we came to visit. Her neighbors thought she was completely crazy for doing this since she could just go buy a gallon of brand name orange juice at the grocery store. Of course, my Oma thought they were crazy for not juicing every piece of fruit growing right there. It was even on their own property. I wouldn't be surprised if she went out there in the middle of the night and picked their fruit.
Lisa Brofs is brought to you each and every week here on every other week here on Illinois Public Media as part of Common Ground Co-op, and we do appreciate their time with us. In just a couple minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on the Closing Market Report.
It's National Tortilla Chip Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, Robert Fulton died, an American inventor and engineer. He brought steamboating to a commercial success. In 1839, William Smith Otis, a civil engineer from Philadelphia, received a patent for the steam shovel. In 1849, John Henry Comstock was born, an American entomologist. He did pioneering work in the systematic classification of scale insects. He spent a summer in Alabama in 1878 studying the cotton leaf worm before becoming the chief entomologist of USDA. In 1874, John Bachman died, an American naturalist and Lutheran minister. He published studies of southern animals and works on botany and agriculture. In 1938, DuPont began production of nylon toothbrush bristles for its Miracle Tough toothbrush. The nylon bristles replaced bristles of neck hairs from wild swine from Siberia, Poland, and China. And in 2006, Andrew Sherratt died, an English archaeologist. He was an expert on the prehistory of Europe and the origins of agriculture. He proposed a theory of secondary products revolution that made farming possible even on agriculturally marginal land by trading in milk, wool, and textiles. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Leavitt joins us today, and he's our meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And well, we've had a few days that were really nice. It's gotten cooler here, and then it looks like tonight might not be very pretty in Urbana-Champaign and some of the surrounding counties in Illinois and Indiana.
Well, that's true, unless your idea of beauty is more snow in some of those areas. It's a little bit of a messy weather pattern because we have a fair amount of moderate to somewhat heavy precip is expected to come across, about I-74 south. And then north of there, there's going to be colder air, precipitation will be all snow in those areas, but the amounts will be lighter. So what I should have said at the outset, it looks like most of the stuff in the central part of the state down the I-70 corridor will be in the form of rain, and then it'll mix with snow a little later on. But then as you get north, it'll be all snow from up toward I-80 and up into southern Wisconsin and those areas, but the moisture isn't there. So you have a choice. You either get a little light to maybe some moderate snow, or you get some moderate to heavy rain in the southern parts with some snow mixed in. The models are still all over the place, and the forecasters have been wrestling with this problem of rain, snow, and quantities. But so far, my guess would be we'd look for maybe 1 to 3 inches in the northern third of the region, 2 to 4 with some mixed in central areas, and then from south of 74 southward, I'd say mostly rain with maybe an inch or two of snow on the tail end, but the rain could be substantial, maybe half to 1.5 inches.
Thank you so much for taking the time and for checking in on the forecast for us. I do appreciate that.
My pleasure, Todd.
Pete Leavitt is an agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. A couple of notes. Please do try to visit the Illinois Soybean Research Summit. You can still sign up online if you'd like at ilsoy, that's ilsoy.org, or call the Illinois Soybean Association in Bloomington. They'd like your reservation. It's free, but you'll get a meal out of the deal. That kicks off at 8 a.m. or thereabouts tomorrow morning. We'll talk with Bruce. We'll talk about, I'm sorry. Well, what do you know? I just forgot completely about it. Anyway, we'll talk about crop insurance in the morning, and then Daryl will be there in the afternoon, and of course Dan Zwicker will be along in the afternoon too. We'll do a Commodity Week program live. That's all at the Soybean Association Soybean Summit tomorrow on research at the I Hotel. I'll be there all day long. You can sign up online if you'd like. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.